We don't know if you've ever actually made a study of the Declaration, but it's quite an amazing few paragraphs that lay out all there is to be said about the operation of any United Lodge. And the very first sentence lays the foundation for the rest of it. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. That independence covers not only the individual, but all lodges. Each lodge is independent and autonomous, sharing, of course, wisdom, information, ideas with each other, but each sets up their own program for giving out what is the cause of theosophy, the teachings of the ancient wisdom religion as found in the original writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. So that's the basis for operation. And then it says, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. We hope that newcomers will come, be interested, and wish to associate with this group. But you can't be a member. It's really funny if you start to think about it. You become an associate, not a member, because it's independent devotion. And membership sounds like following a text of rules. And it isn't so. Those rules are for you yourself to set based on what you learn and understand. Therefore, this lodge, no lodge, has any constitution, bylaws, officers. It is its own little association, and it's supported totally by its audience or its associates in terms of work, of energy, and of money. There is no fee for anything. No one is salaried. It is a voluntary effort on their part to take what has been given to them and give it back so that others can see it and hopefully understand it and appreciate it. The recognition of ULT is that anyone who is working in the true service of humanity, no matter what labels might be attached to their efforts, is a theosophist. And we, as we struggle to keep this work going, remind people that although there are no fees and we don't pass the hat, there of course is expense in running any operation. So we are dependent on people contributing as they will, as they feel. But the purpose of this work, this lofty purpose, is to awaken souls to the fact that we are all one, and that universal brotherhood is not a wished for thing, but is a reality. And as we act in opposition to it, we create difficulties for ourselves. So this is, in essence, a school of life. And the only tuition is our own energy and application. Now, our Sunday morning in the month of January is the path of spiritual evolution. And next Sunday, it will be cycles of spiritual opportunity. As you all know, we have Wednesday evening meetings from 7:30 to 8:30, and we're studying the ocean of theosophy in that always fascinating subject of reincarnation. And that meeting, of course, allows time for questions and answers. And then on Wednesday from 5:15 to 7:15, we have a reference library available and someone to answer your questions or help you find a particular article or book. The Sunday mornings are a variety of effort, of lectures and panels, and as we have this morning, a forum talk. So we will have a short talk and then plenty of time for questions. Oh, and answers.
If I could take a few liberties with a statement by Theodore Roosevelt. If you could kick the person in the pants who is the cause for everything that does or does not happen to you in your life, you probably won't be able to sit for a month. That seems to sum up the word responsibility, doesn't it? Well, for many centuries, man has gone on in this Western world with no understanding of his nature and no idea of his real responsibility, because he has been taught to a greater or lesser degree that he is a created being, and whatever soul he may have was donated to him by the Creator. He has been given fear in the form of hell's fire, damnation, and eternal torment on one side, and on the other, the promise of reward in the form of pearly gates, angels, no sorrows, no tears, in heaven for what might be called good conduct. The ancients, however, had a different idea of soul and regarded man not as a creature, but as himself a creator, with the power to make his instruments better, with the total responsibility, control, and guidance over the events of his life. They held that all beings spring from the same boundless, omniscient source, which is the root and essence and cause, the one spirit, the one consciousness, the one power to grow, without which at its root there is no form, however high or low. Mr. B.P. Wadia tells us, the study of the wise ancients convinces us that our forefathers knew better and more than we do. It is one of the tasks of theosophy to awaken an intelligent appreciation of the silvery past so that an intelligent adaptation of some of the old truths to modern life and conditions may take place. The strong souls coming to birth these days, however, are storming the barriers of doctrinal theology. Many of them will join the great number of the unchurched, who, while not adhering to any denominational regiment, are not yet to be classified as agnostics or atheists, but rather as those who prefer to find their God in the quiet recesses of their own soul. For out of the heart comes the issues of life. And when men and women everywhere seriously try to penetrate to the roots of spiritual issues, the quality of their faith will outdistance the patterned faith of creeds. And that is certainly a form of spiritual growth. Growth can be defined as a collective process in which the most recently achieved state, level, or plateau is always deemed preferable, better, and quantitatively superior to that which was preceded. That sounds like a reasonable definition of growth. This description, however much we agree with it, contains a descriptive component which implies that growth takes place in a given linear direction, and that this change, this growth, is only interpreted as an improvement. Thus, it refers to growth that is oriented toward the higher. And that improvement is actually inescapable. It should seem a logical extrapolation or conclusion then that tomorrow will always be better than today. Somehow that isn't what the real world reality shows us to be true. One of the great messages of the United Lodge of Theosophists and the Theosophical movement in general is that the key to human spiritual growth is quite simply and always knowledge. The knowledge spoken of here and the responsibility to gain that knowledge is yours and only yours. Spiritual growth and your progress toward it Spiritual growth and your progress towards it would lie in the goal of reaching to the highest possible element of man's nature, and that would be perfectibility. And that is attained along four main lines. One would be the eradication of selfishness in all forms. Two, the absolute cultivation of the inner spiritual man by meditation, by reaching to and communion with the divine. And three, the control of fleshly appetites and desires, all lower material interests being deliberately subordinated to the behests of the spirit. And four, the careful performance of every duty belonging to one's station in life, without desire for reward, leaving results for divine law. Many great minds have dwelt on this. St. Paul wrote that although I speak with the tongues of men and angels and have not charity, I am become a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. The voice of the silence says much the same thing, but a little more directly. It asks us to step out of the sunlight into the shade so as to make room for others. I think everyone would agree that our purpose in life is growth, physical, mental, moral, and spiritual. The purpose of life is to raise the mortal into immortality, to give time and opportunity for the deathless spiritual potency at the core of man's being to develop, grow, and unfold into perfection. Exhibiting this fundamental oneness, altruism, and compassion are human expressions of cosmic and planetary realities. Humanity is more closely joined inwardly and physically, and our thoughts and feelings have a potent impact on others. By taking responsibility for and by following our highest inner promptings as best we can, we benefit our immediate surroundings and humanity as a whole. The ideal is to put the welfare of humanity and all that lives ahead of our own progress. The teachings of theosophy are deep, but they are also most simple. Some of us may not comprehend the deeper teachings, but within each of us is the ability to live the life, the spiritual life, the ability to do our best each day for others as well as ourselves. Are we living for the purpose of making ourselves as comfortable as possible and pushing unpleasant reflections out of our heads as much as possible? until death delivered us? Or are we living to fulfill the grand and far-reaching purposes of the soul, which extend far and away beyond the limits of birth and death? If you seek the rationale for your life, look well and truly into the secret places of the heart. Tune your life to a spiritually constructive note and live as becomes an essentially divine being, a potential master of nature and power of his own destiny. Be responsible for your own spiritual growth. Everything in your life is a reflection of a choice you have made. Maybe not in this lifetime, but you can be sure that you are responsible for the choice. If you want a different result, you need to make different choices. You already take responsibility for your health, your relationships, your peace of mind, your beliefs, everything in your life. It takes a great deal of courage and commitment, doesn't it? But as President Truman said, the buck stops here. And of course he meant you. Do I need to remind you of what Teddy Roosevelt said? I think not. Once again, our topic for this morning is taking responsibility for spiritual growth.
Before your questions, we have a question. Why would it be necessary to spend an hour on such a subject? Why? Yes?
Well, what comes to our mind first is the term trailblazer. Mm-hmm. And when we go back in time to men like Lewis and Clark, and always to HBB yourself, pointing out the way, we as individuals may not be able to read the trail marks in the correct way. Here we learn.
Yes, here we learn. But we're focused more on why are we questioning our responsibility. There has to be a basis in our education, our lives, the way we were raised, everything we know that makes us think we're not responsible. And what would that be? Yes?
For some, it's the idea that if they are capable of spiritual growth and advancement, it's due to grace mm-hmm. from some divine being, that in their own effort they are flawed, miserable sinners who without that grace
right.
could not make any.
Dependent on that assistance, yes.
That's just one example there could be.
Mm-hmm. But what are the others? Yes.
Well, the constant pounding on the TV, which we don't own a TV and don't watch it, but whenever we see it, there's this constant pounding through commercials and through television shows of all the groups of victims in America, and it's somebody else's fault why you can't be who you want to be.
Mm-hmm. And staying with that, the medium of entertainment, music, movies, television, all tell us ridiculous notions that there's this one perfect person, and if you don't get that perfect person, you'll never be happy, full of despair. And then there's the idea that to be successful, you have to be rich and famous. You had your hand up? Yes.
Yeah, it seems that becoming responsible for your own growth is like growing up from your family and stepping away from your mm-hmm. parents' authority. And that takes a lot of courage. There's a
yes.
lot of fear involved in saying to a parent, no, I'm going to do it my way, not your way, even if you say it kindly. So fear of disapproval, fear of rejection, fear
right.
of what other people are thinking to be responsible for yourself is a very...
very courageous moment.
It's a courageous moment.
You know what's funny? Any parent should be proud of a child that says, I want to decide this for myself. It means they were well taught that they have a place to stand on and it's their own. Our educational system is really, in many, many ways, anti this whole concept of brotherhood, because even subtly it encourages competition. So we're faced with a world we live in that's very aggressive. Television is very aggressive. You say you don't even own one, and yet you know what's going on it, because it's constant, and everyone's sort of excited by it. So we're not cast in stone in it, but we have walls of it all around us. And it does take courage to say, wait a minute, I'm responsible for my own growth, not some outside being or some educator that's going to lift us up with wisdom. That does take courage. Yes.
And even science following on the idea that all that we develop into being spiritual or otherwise is a result of either our heredity from others or the environment outside of ourselves. And newer ideas are every spiritual inclination of altruism, even a spiritual understanding of God, is based on some gene or process going on in the brain. So where is there room for responsibility if it all comes down to atoms and forces outside ourselves?
Now you see the walls surrounding us. Entertainment, which is an escape for most. Materialistic science, which tells us we aren't. We just simply aren't. We're an hallucination with the molecules moving in the brain, and we think we're something, but we're not. We're just a momentary sort of illusion, and we disappear when the body dies. And then we have religion. For the most part, religion is telling us you can't. You can't without us, either the priest, or you can't without the grace of God. So everything surrounding us says you're hopeless. So how do we then have this desire for spiritual growth and end up searching in these ideas? Yes?
I'm not sure I have an answer.
Yes, you do have an answer.
It's inside. But everything we're saying just popped, the thing that pops into my head is when all else fails, there's always the garden. So, and the garden's inside of us, but we're so distracted by everything, we forget to look inside.
And fearful of rejection, and also fearful of hurting those around us by being different from them.
Yeah.
But that happens because we are thinkers. We are souls. And we reach a point in any given life where that wall is so oppressive that we are determined to break it down or break through it to free our own minds. And that is a kind of inward initiation. That is a wake-up. But what usually happens in life when we have a wake-up of some kind? I mean, we may feel this urge to go get a new and different career because we feel this development within ourselves. Yes?
First reaction is probably they're opposing me. Somebody's in my way. There's obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's an inner obstacle that comes up against you. You're holding yourself back.
Yes. Your inner obstacle is, of course, more severe and more of a problem than the outer obstacles. There's a point, and Mr. Judge talks about it in Notes on the Bhagavad Gita, where because you are beginning to look at larger ideas, a bigger picture of yourself and of life, that the world will stand against you in a way because The implication is, if you're right, they're wrong. And nobody wants to realize that from someone else. It requires an interior awareness. Yes.
Well, if we're awoken by the alarm clock on a day off, on the weekend,
It's your own fault, isn't it?
So most likely we'll just ignore the alarm and go back to sleep. Mm-hmm. But if it happens on a weekday when we have work, then we get up and we go on, we stay up. So part of the problem seems to be, it's not just waking up, but it's knowing the goal. It's know what you're waking up to and what you're trying to work towards. And not only do we not have a sense of responsibility, we don't know what we're growing towards spiritually.
Right. You know, you bring up a point that is one of the worst tragedies for the soul in evolution. We are told in theosophy that after we fall asleep and we go through the dreaming stage and into sleep, we move into deep sleep. And in deep sleep, there is no personal self. We stand in deep sleep as pure spiritual beings, equal to every other spiritual being. For all we know, we converse with the Buddha in deep sleep, because our hunger for growth is so huge. But when we come back, we have to go through that dreaming state, which is colored and twisted by our own personal thinking. We wake up and we may feel, and then we don't know what it's all about, because we don't speak the language that we speak and know in deep sleep. And that is a fundamental part of spiritual growth. We have to begin studying, reading, looking into devotional books, finding something that moves us from where we currently find ourselves with alarm clocks and jobs and everything else to a spiritual, hungry soul. Once we do that, we start to develop parts of that language because we want to. And then we're told, before you go to sleep, put aside all of the mental, physical, personal concerns. They'll be there for you when you wake up. It's guaranteed. So you don't have to carry them with you. Instead, read something devotional or some poetry, or listen to a piece of music that elevates you, or look at a picture that takes your breath away, and then go to sleep. You're entering that deep sleep state, yes, as a novice in this language, but at least aware that there is such a language. So we need that deep sleep state, and we need to bring it here. When you wake up in the morning, write down a significant dream. It's a memory twisted from deep sleep. It carries the hints of the symbolism that you need to look at. And we are also counseled, don't talk to people about that dream. Hold it within to retain its power. And if you know someone that you look up to, that you think is very spiritually oriented, ask them some questions about your dream, but keep it in your own purview, your own protection. Yes.
Well, here in these rooms, it's brought out. Point out the way. Mm-hmm. Look within. And we have certain literature.
Certain what?
Literature, the Bhagavad Gita, etc. Only pick up those books to look at them the first time. Well, I don't know what all that means. But at some point in time, I did know I had it in me. Once that is discovered, we begin to apply, not the words particularly, the impression they make upon us.
The ideas. We live in a world of ideas. The problem is we're so busy in listening to the ideas and opinions of others, the authorities and things, that we seldom look to ourselves. Oh, it's wonderful when your brain turns to a colander. There was something you said that we thought was very significant. Not that the other things were not. That's funny. Well, we'll have to come back to it. Yes?
The word authority is also important, mm-hmm. as a barrier, and our traditional religious authority,
yes.
from way back has teachings that are growth-orienting through kindness and teachings that are
rigid.
Growth-oriented through punishment,
mm-hmm.
fear, do
yes.
the right thing or you're going to get a whack. So that's a huge decision-making. Which way do we seek growth? Through the punishment,
right.
authority, or through the kindness open? When a baby's learning to walk, you don't scold it when it falls down. You help it.
Right.
So that's a way to begin also.
And we should also remember, looking at children as the example, when a baby learns to walk, that's just the precursor to running. I mean, it doesn't say I'm satisfied and happy with what I'm doing. It goes on from there. And that's something that we have to do. We can get satisfied, even in theosophy, just knowing certain fundamental ideas and feeling secure in it and not realizing, wait, the growth is mine. I have to do it. Theosophy isn't going to grow me. I have to take the ideas and make them alive and come to the realization that I'm separate from nothing, that we really, truly are one. We face the same issues, we have the same powers, and we have seen what some have done. We can look at those incredible lives, and we often think, and their writings, but they didn't write anything. The Buddha didn't write anything. Krishna didn't write anything. It's that we have the ideas because they gave them out and others wrote about them. Yes?
We have those three fundamentals. Hmm? We give them out every meeting in some way. But the word that comes to our mind is the term glossary. Glossary. We use 99 words per hour.
For what?
99 words we use in a given point of time, and we use them without really understanding their true meaning. They become materialistic in their effect upon us. Here, we're told, look within.
Mm-hmm.
Look within. But to get back to that term, what does that mean, glossary or glossary?
A glossary is like an index with definitions of terms, but not just a brief one, but to show their history often. Mr. Judge tells us, go to the dictionary. Look up words. One of our favorites was realizing the meaning of enthusiasm. Entheosism. It means in God. If you're enthusiastic, you are within the divine. That's the impulse that's directing you. It's just a silly minor point, but a significant one in a way. The definitions of theosophy in the Funk and Wagnalls Dictionary, written by Mr. Judge. Yes?
The biggest contribution is interesting because it brings to light the idea that in any period of time, whether it's an hour, we each have a certain catalog of words
mm-hmm.
that we communicate.
Yeah.
Yet we wonder if how many of us are really aware of the words we commonly use. So wouldn't being, since words are so powerful, wouldn't taking responsibility for our spiritual growth being very selective and choosing of the words we use in everyday life, being more aware of our words and the effect it has on ourselves?
Yeah, the whole process is to be aware, but it starts with to be aware of thoughts. It doesn't matter if you control your speech, if your thoughts are all over the place. We can hide behind words. We wonder if everyone realizes that the word disciple comes from discipline. Disciple is not someone that's just been plucked out as you are a very good candidate for this. It is someone who has applied discipline to themselves in order to become a disciple. And it is the discipline that is that, which is why it is said, when the student is ready, the master will appear. The discipline has to already be in place before one can be allowed to be taught anything further. And that's another mystery of all this. You cannot, through responsibility and spiritual growth, reach this high level that you probably imagine. And that's another problem. We think spiritual growth is psychic powers, maybe reading the minds of others, predicting the future, but it isn't that at all. It is understanding and realizing the universality of all life and acting appropriately in any situation. So the student who is ready to take on further discipline is the student that will be approached by what we might call a chela, a disciple of someone higher. So it's a descendancy, an ascendancy as well, of teacher and student, as you may be a teacher to someone else because you know some. So it goes up the scale. But the point of such growth and such learning is not so you should be taught and instructed by those higher beings, but that you should be able to help and communicate these ideas to the rest of humanity. And let's remember, as we're suffering, and that's usually why we come to these ideas, something fails us. Some authority, something we've always believed, turns out to be empty or false, and we look for truth. Well, humanity is in this condition. It seems like everybody is tap dancing and making as much noise as they can so they don't have to think about how awful they feel about what's going on in front of them or what's challenging them. So anything we can do, even with the little bit that we know about theosophy, just dropping hints, not jumping in and saying, I'm going to teach you all about this, but in a conversation, if somebody says, well, you only live once, just frown and say, well, do you really believe that? I don't think that's true. And then maybe you can quote somebody. Like our favorite quote in that sort of challenge is Voltaire, who said, being born again is no more unlikely than having been born in the first place. So you can start a conversation. You're not trying to change their opinion. You're trying to make them think about what they think and why they think that way. Yes?
Based on what was said, if we want to take responsibility, it has to be transformed into some kind of daily discipline. Doesn't it make a difference whether the rules of that discipline come from ourselves versus the discipline we may adopt from somebody else's rules?
And doesn't it make a difference whether the rules for our own discipline come from ourselves or from others? But we think, as a beginner, you have to look to those around you. It might be a parent, it might be a teacher somewhere that you respect and that you appreciate the way they move through life. And you might ask them, what are your reasons for behaving this way and how did you come to these conclusions? You can use them as a sort of textbook, but you can also turn to, like, Mr. Judge. Turn to his writings and see, what did he say? What did he warn against? Or B.P. Wadia from India, who actually helped start this lodge here in Philadelphia in 1925. So he's like the grandfather of our lodge, or we have a connection to him and a debt to him. And what does he say? So in the beginning, we're dependent on the wisdom of some of the rules of others. And then we start developing our own. As we begin to trust ourselves in what we're learning. You know, we've always thought of H.P. Blavatsky as like the sun. You know, this ball of light and fire that brings life. And Mr. Judge, like a fireplace. He brings light and life and warmth, but you can get close to it. You can't look at the sun. So you start out at the level that you can look at. And then as you begin to develop some awareness of the spirituality and the tenderness of those beings, you can start to approach Blavatsky, knowing that the sun has no intention of destroying you, but of elevating you. Yes?
The declaration of the front and the middle, we suggest looking at the back of that declaration.
Wait, you're fading for me.
Okay, that we look at the back of that declaration.
Mm-hmm.
And we noticed that there were quite a few Caribbean nations where there were lodges and still are.
Mm-hmm.
Then we learn HBB's travels herself, where she stopped. Then we look at our own selves. And we found out that Great Britain freed her slaves in 1834. And that many of them came here to the United States before 1865 in the Emancipation. And then to make myself we heard so many as children ideas being put out that we nearly 9 years later we see them in the secret doctrine, in the teaching. And then we recall a grandfather whose favorite statement was, I declare before you. And each one of us can do that own research and trace where these ideas originated.
Except it goes back into the night of time. You know, we have to get a larger perspective. It is said that for 18 million years, as thinkers, we have been in activity on this planet. But before that, we were thinkers on another planet, the remnant of which we see, or the bones, is the moon. And before that, it is infinity. You can't stop going backwards, and you can't stop the mentally going forward. So we can never trace all of it. What we can trace is the thinking of the elder brothers of humanity and how they have worked throughout the ages. We have such a benefit. We have it in black and white. We can read it and judge for ourselves. In ancient times, it was word of mouth, and you had to memorize it in order to carry it with you. And that's another good point for spiritual growth. If some phrase in a devotional book or in a piece of poetry lifts you so that you're clear of all this noise and nonsense, memorize it. Commit it to yourself. Say it to yourself every day. So at least for that moment, you ring as a vessel in a tone that's in keeping with that spirituality. Because we are spiritual beings, but we're trapped in the ideas that we hold. The walls that surround us are built by us. and can only be unbuilt by us. Yes, we take wisdom from others and wisdom from the teachings, but we have to turn that wisdom into an effort, into an energy, and use it to free ourselves. Yes. Wait, there's someone in front of you.
Well, we are born into this world looking out. Mm-hmm.
Not by choice, always.
No, but it's the reality of being born into this world. And we don't really look within until we come to the point where we see the lies of the world, or the misconceptions, or the fragmented truths.
Or the pain around us.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the pain around us. Not, you know, and that that we really have to, when we come to the point of saying, well, what is the truth? You know, and we live in a world where there are many truths, but they all seem to be relative truths. Are there truths that are universal? Are there truths that we can adhere to that will draw us within, rather than pushing us without?
The first and most important truth, universally, and we can really begin to see it for ourselves, is that we are separate from nothing and no one. That we, as thinkers, are part and parcel of the whole universal expression. Which means, and this is where people stumble often, which means you cannot look at another soul and say, what a monster. What a terrible, terrible, that's no soul. Well, you're wrong. That's a thinker and a chooser who has, for whatever motive, gone in the wrong direction, but it's still a part of life, a part of you, a part of spirit. And the end result, if such a soul does not turn around out of despair, usually, turn around and start moving back towards that spiritual reality, the result is that that soul drops out of this whole period of evolution and loses all of the effort and energy put forth in this period, but will come forth again in the next one to start from where they stand. And hopefully they will have learned enough from the bitter lessons to do better. So that's the first and most fundamental lesson. You can separate yourself from no one. No one is beneath you, no one is above you. Everyone is equal except in the use of their thinking and choosing and spiritual growth. The highest being you can imagine is identical to you. That is why the Buddha said, look within, thou art Buddha. Wake up and start acting and living that way, and you will know. So, yes, there are universals, and we call them principles, ideas upon which we can stand and face ourselves. And that's the hardest part. Facing our parents, other figures of authority are difficult, but facing ourselves is the hardest thing of all. Yes?
In the talk, it was mentioned that the key to taking responsibility is knowledge. But isn't that knowledge already within us? Wasn't it said to be impacted? If that's the case, the reason for our study then must be to reawaken what we already know, not to seek for something that's outside ourselves.
Yes, it's to reawaken, but at the same time, we may have had glimmers of it, in spite of everything, but it isn't just the reawakening it, it's knocking those walls down so we can make it alive in us. It can't live in us if we are choked with prejudice. And most of us are, in one way or another. We don't even realize it. We may respond to a piece of news going, oh, isn't that awful? But then we don't do anything about it. We don't seek to solve it or to help those who are trying to solve it. We just think our feeling is enough, but it isn't. We have to act on the wisdom we have in order to increase that wisdom. Yes?
One good question. Who am I? What am I? And we have always listened to the jazz singers, especially those groups from New Orleans and so forth, among the freed slaves, and even in post-World War I in particular. And the language they used to look down on it, weren't particularly interested or turned on by the jazz. But having heard the Declaration, having heard what you said, we began to try to interpret those terms and terminology that they used. Of course, education today is better.
But what terminology are you referring to?
The terminology used in the ghettos in New Orleans.
No, we wondered if you could give us an example.
Well, Louis Armstrong,
Satchmo,
the great jazz artists, and even La Scala in Italy, where they sing operas and so forth. That's the educated side of the language is so very important.
Yeah, it's interesting though that you mentioned opera, because my father was an opera singer. He would translate the words from the opera, and they're stupid. If opera were done in English, nobody would go, because the woman passionately is singing, "This is my favorite scarf. If I didn't have this scarf, I couldn't go out tonight." What? And yet you think, because it's in Italian and this music is so elevating, that she must be saying something significant. So that's pretty stupid. But the music is what matters. And the same with Satchel Mouth, Louis Armstrong. And, you know, if we could live our lives so we had a diet and a plan, you know, the plan was, in the morning I'm going to study or act on this or take note of every time I'm negative or not responsive to what's healthy and good, and in the afternoon I will, and in the evening I will, and at every point have a piece of music or something, a diet of beauty and love. And it's so frustrating. We're the richest people in the world. We're rich in the writings and the teachings we have. What did we read recently? A statistic that if you have a roof over your head and a somewhat comfortable temperature in your building and you have food, you are better off than over 3/4 of the rest of the world. And the response to that comment was, yes, but I have problems and mortgages and da 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 da. That isn't the point. The point is your baseline is safety and security. Do something from there. Be brave, be noble. Think about the 3/4 of the rest of the world and what you might do, even in the smallest way, to help. Yes?
Just to put that in perspective, we learned that if you make $32,000 a year, you are part of the global 1%.
Really? Whoa, that's shocking. Yes.
One of the key ideas in theosophy that we learn about taking responsibility is sometimes the only thing we can do is take responsibility for our attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And we were thinking of Louis Armstrong, the one song that he popularized is sort of like an anthem almost, and that's, I see trees of green,
right,
and all the rest of it. And I think to myself,
what a wonderful world.
The whole, if you follow the lyrics, the whole song is about how we choose to look at the world and interpret it. And it's a beautiful song, spiritual.
Well, we know an even better one, and we certainly agree with that. But Alan Alda sang on Broadway in the show The Apple Tree. And he is, it's Mark Twain's tale about Adam and Eve and the troubles that they were having. And he sings, "I see animals and birds and flowers, every color, every shape and size. So if ever I'm attacked by boredom, I just close my eyes and see this beautiful, fantastic, wonderful, wonderful world." And he goes through all the stages of thinking and feeling that way. It's a very theosophical song. Now, that's another interesting thing to do. Look at the books surrounding you. Listen to some of the songs. As we all know, John Lennon wrote many theosophical songs. And what's the name of the one who started playing the sitar?
Ravi Shankar.
Well, yeah, but he studied with Ravi Shankar. The Beatle.
George Harrison,
yes. He wrote many, many theosophical songs. Moody Blues. You can go looking and discover there are young minds then. It's hard to think of them as old, but they're old now. And there are young minds right now working in our world. Can we help them? Can we support them? Can we be responsible for some of the enthusiasm that they need to keep going? Because we know how we've been discouraged ourselves in life. So it isn't just our own spiritual growth. We are, this is a crude way of saying it, but we are the fertilizer for the next seeds in the ground. And we have to do our job. We have to make it not horrible to be a weird spiritual thinker, to talk about these strange subjects. Well, there has been enough energy put forward that now you can use the word karma or say, no, I know I've lived before and people don't want to put you away. We've come a long way, but we have further to go. We want people to know it is a mark of intelligence and sincerity if you study and act on these ideas. So, we are responsible for ourselves and for each other. Meeting is adjourned. Oh, you don't want to leave. No, but we believe in cycles. And we follow the cycle. We respect it.
Okay, this is a comment over there.
I didn't get a chance to answer.